Hello and welcome to the EMG Health Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia. You know, a number of years ago, I was at a life science conference that I had helped put together. And at meal and coffee breaks, I'd do my best to circulate and chat to as many people as possible, make them feel welcome, and, well, heck, I enjoy meeting new people. So one lunchtime, I see this really classy lady whose sense of style was head and shoulders above everyone else there. And as I didn't recognize her, I thought, why not say hello? So I asked to join her, and boy, was I ever grateful. Carolee Lee is a polymath, a font of knowledge who seems to have an insatiable appetite to learn more while being an utter delight to speak to. We became friends, and I was so pleased to have the chance to invite her onto this podcast. Rather than give you her resume, which is my normal tactic, we're going to discuss a whole bunch of things. Carolee, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for that lovely introduction. And it's, of course, wonderful to join you today.
Well, I'm thrilled and I'm really excited for everyone who's listening around the world so that they can get a taste of what an amazing lady you truly are. So let's begin. You know, we're all products of our environment to a greater or lesser extent. Please tell us about the elements of your upbringing and the sentinel events, if you will, that you think influence the course of your life.
Well, you know, like anyone, I'm sure there are many, but the ones that I really think stand out the most are the fact that I was always very competitive and I loved sports or any kind of team activity. And I think learning to play successfully as part of a team for the benefit of the team and not me individually taught me that we could have a goal of winning on a much larger scale that we could do collectively and collaboratively as a group of committed individuals with a single vision or mission. And so I've always gravitated towards either joining that team or creating my own. And I think that's been a major imprint on my life.
So what was your sport, Carolee?
So I loved all sports, from team sports such as softball, volleyball, swimming, to individual sports like skiing and golf, where although you could say that in some sense they could also be team sports, for me it was in those cases it was more about achieving either a lower score or a faster pace. So and running, but so you know you name the sport and I just loved it.
You know I'm very similar. I don't know that I'm particularly good at anything. In fact, I sort of skiing for me was always just plummeting downhill with a wish and a prayer. But there's something about being competitive singly or as part of a team. And I think that does influence the way people behave, not just their success, but the way they behave. You know, team players, good team players tend to be, I don't know if you found this, more affable, more friendly, more sociable by definition than people who are loners. Does that make sense?
I think it does, it makes tremendous sense. I think that's absolutely accurate. And then, of course, there's a fair amount of research on what happens when you have men and women as part of a team versus a single sex team. So, and that changes the dynamic also. And I think in both cases, there's a need as part of a larger team to participate not as the individual but as for the benefit of that single mission or vision of that team, which is generally to win whatever that prize might be or that whatever that achievement might be. And if you're working as an individual, obviously your vision is quite different. So like your idea of skiing, you know, if you were skiing as part of a team, you wouldn't be as reckless perhaps as just barreling down the hill. So yeah, there are many factors that go into team play versus individual sports.
Well, we're going to talk quite a bit, actually, about men and women and sex interactions. And I'm very precise in using the term sex rather than gender, because that's such a politically charged issue nowadays. But I'm going to, forewarn that maybe I'm a bit of a dinosaur in some regards. And I celebrate the difference between men and women, and hopefully that can be a narrative that you can come back to and you can tell me why I'm wrong about things. So let's look at one of your business enterprises. You got into business and you founded Carolee Designs, which you also ran. Can you describe that journey for us and you know, what led to your decision to eventually sell the company?
Mm-hmm. So I grew up with very little and very little in terms of either experience such as vacations and or extravagant gifts. I grew up in a very modest income, middle income family. And although I had lots of love and I was told that I could do anything, fortunately, I think I always wanted to make sure that I had, like Virginia Woolf, a room of my own, a voice of my own. And in my case, income of my own. And so I think I was very motivated to drive towards financial success because of growing up with such scarce financial means. So that was definitely a factor. And then it gets back to, I think the sports piece, you know, led me to want to build an incredible team of, you know, highly committed individuals, which I think is what you attract if you build great teams. And to make the very best products possible at the highest standards of customer service and attention to detail. In other words, to be the best, not necessarily the biggest, but clearly the best in the field. And I think that's a discerning factor that we should also at some point talk about, because it's not about, for me, the team is not just about the winning, but it is that collaborative spirit and camaraderie that is built so that there is that single effort by a group of people. And I did that actually from scratch by starting at my kitchen table and building a multi-million-dollar international company whose workforce was 85% women and was the most highly regarded brand in the industry. So fortunately, that did catch the attention of many other larger companies. So eventually, I did have the opportunity to sell the company, even though I thought I never would. But you know, the idea at some point in time in your life that you might be able to do something different that could have a larger or more significant impact on the well-being of society is for me a valuable one. And so I was able to sell my company to Luxottica about 15 years ago, and I did that. And that allowed me to pursue the dreams that we're talking about today. So quite a significant moment.
And as we're going to discover, as I already know, you've certainly kept very busy since then. So I'd like to start getting down into that. And as a preface, I believe I've told you that I have five rules of engagement for any business type activity. Avoid, shall we say, difficult people. That's the polite version. Learn something new every day. Enjoy the work. Leave the world a better place and succeed. Don't try. Succeed. I think it's Yoda who says, there is no try, there's only do. So beyond Carolee Designs, you've also served as a business leader, board member, investor, and so on. What principles have guided your engagements?
Well, clearly you've articulated several of them without question. And I think what you do learn very quickly is that it's all about people. It's about the people who you'll work with, whose passions you'll share, who will help you change, who will nurture you. And I think the people who you affiliate with have to align, as you said, you know, to your values, ethics, and principles. And then I think the second for me is, how will the work that I'm doing create the greatest and the biggest impact on society? And lastly, how can I positively nurture and grow as an individual and be nurtured and grow and nurture and grow and help develop other individuals around me? So mentoring has always been a big part of what I've done in my organization. And I think, you know, you have to figure out who the people and organizations are with whom you want to partner and who represent those values and ethics. And like you said, I think the last thing I want to do is be around negative energy. And so you steer yourself and make choices pretty quickly. And then this gets also, I think, back to what I said at the beginning. It's this idea that you need to be best at what you're doing and put your best effort forward. And I strongly believe that, you know, people talk about luck and then you talk about success. I think you create luck and success by being the best. And I'm sure they're all intertwined, and I don't want to underestimate for a moment that there are elements that bring us great fortune. But I do think mindset and attitude are a big part of this.
Yeah, I'm called to remember one of my dear friends told me that he told his daughters that he didn't care what they did, just be the best at it. And, you know, if you're a server in a restaurant, be the best server, because, you know, you can take pride in what you do. You'll bring joy to other people's lives. And you've also mentioned culture, which is so critically important. You know, building a business based on a culture. The moment that you, I think, focus on the eyes on the prize, you lose the joy of the journey. And the journey should be great fun, right?
Totally. And I so agree about the culture. And the culture is created in a myriad of different ways. And some of them are very subtle. But companies certainly and teams have cultures. And those cultures depend on the leadership. So leadership goes from, you know, top to bottom and bottom to top. And it's expressed by every individual who understands, absorbs, and can articulate clearly what that culture is. So I do think that's a very important element, which you identified.
So changing subjects slightly, I know that you're a very healthy lady. You lead a very healthy lifestyle. And so you're interested in health span and not just lifespan. As a doctor, you know, we purportedly work in the healthcare industry. We don't. We work in the disease care industry. How do we get more people to take ownership of their wellness and do their bit from the perspective of a lady who has done just that for herself and for others?
You know, it's such a great question, Jonathan, and I wish I had like a silver bullet that I could, or just a kernels of pearls of wisdom that I could really disseminate quickly and create massive and sweeping change for all people, because it does seem so basic, doesn't it? So much of it comes down to exercise, to diet, to mindset, even if we just stayed on those three. And yet in this country, you know, obesity is rampant and type 2 diabetes, as you know, is rampant. And so much of our diseases, in at least in the U.S., are lifestyle inflicted. So I think information and education is such a huge part of convincing people to lead healthier lives. And when I started my first company, there were no health clubs, and I enrolled everyone. This is the 85% female workforce. I enrolled everyone in whatever kind of health club I could find. It was like it had some weights and different things, and we would go running at lunchtime, and the kitchen would be filled with what would be called healthy snacks. So, you know, fast forward, at least that there's much more of a proliferation of choices of how we can live, quote unquote, a healthier lifestyle. But still, there's a vast, in my opinion, a vast lack of information and education. And that was one of the reasons why I started Access Circles, which, of course, you're familiar with. And the idea of hosting forums and bringing together brilliant people like you to share your wisdom and knowledge with us, so that we can learn and therefore lead healthier and more purposeful lives. And then WAM, Women's Health Access Matters, which was the second not-for-profit that I created, which to share even more details and data on how women who make 80% of the healthcare decisions in their families are incredibly understudied, and with the hope that perhaps they can be in better control of their lives and therefore affect the lives of their families. So that is one of my goals.
Well, I'm going to dig down into those and other subjects. So at the beginning, I mentioned, the difference between men and women. Vive la différence, celebrate that. You could be seen as an advertisement for how women can have it all. You're extremely successful by any metric, and might I say, very feminine. Incidentally, all the women I've worked with who are successful are exactly the same. And I know there's a narrative in the media that women have to, for women to succeed, they have to be better than men and they have to be aggressive and all the rest. Actually, all the men I know who are successful are delightful, humble, polite human beings, or maybe they're just the ones I associate with. You're on the Women's Leadership Board at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. What do you tell young women who want to get to the top? And are my perspectives wrong?
No, I don't think your perspectives are wrong at all. In fact, I think they're very insightful. But I think what perhaps needs to be recognized is that maybe both for men and women, which you've just identified, that humility or that ability to learn to listen, not be judgmental, not be too argumentative, because yes, it might be twice as hard for women because certain things are acceptable for the men, but not for women. I mean, I think you get over that and you just move forward, understanding that perhaps there are ways to be successful as a human being, male or female. But I think for a young person, I think that comes after years of experience. And that's that's mindset and it's a communication skill. And probably also an interpersonal skill. But I think the first thing is you need to find what your mission and your passion are. And you've already identified some of these. You need to dream big and act boldly. I think I always exuded a lot of self-confidence, even if I was terrified. And I think that's so key and critical because think about it. We want to be around people who make us feel like they know what they're doing and know what they're talking about. And I think you have to make the network that you wish you had. You have to create that. It doesn't just fall in your lap. And I think you have to envision problems that you see in the world to figure out, is there one that you really would love to have an impact on changing? And then you need to be relentless. And I am a dog with a bone. I am relentless.
Yeah, it's, I guess it's my version of that would be failure's not an option. Succeed. There is no try. There's only do. And that's absolutely the case. But it is a narrative that I find very troubling. And it's a trope that, a woman who's successful is seen as aggressive. A man who's seen as successful is seen as powerful. And again, it's not been my experience at all. So it's so refreshing to hear you say that. We need to put you on top of a podium and let more people hear it. So, gosh, you've done so much. Let's tackle something else. In 1986, you became a founding member of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation, and you still serve. Can you talk to us about that experience? 1986, that's worth 35 years.
Yeah, it's a long time ago when Evelyn Lauder had been diagnosed with breast cancer, and she really wanted to figure out a way to bring attention to this disease. Very little was known, as you probably are aware, in 1986, and very few resources were allocated at that point to research. So BCRF believed that investing research in the Lauder family and Dr. Larry Norton, who's head of oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering, really felt that investing in research would be the very smartest way to bring about earlier detection, developing treatments, and advancements. And Evelyn always wanted to say she wanted to find a cure in our lifetime. And of course, we haven't found a cure, but BCRF grew from, and I was, honored to be part of this incredibly well-run organization. It grew from really zero to allocating $66 million to research projects all over the globe. And these have had an incredible impact on raising the need in women for awareness of the disease, for example. So this gets back to the earlier comment of how do we create a healthier society? Well, one of the ways was, this is a perfect example, you offer yearly screenings, including mammograms, and you share in the development of treatments and drugs to fight the disease because you've invested in research, which has allowed those diagnostics, treatments, drugs to proliferate. And so it's just, to me, an incredible example of how an organization, which also, let's face it, had a terrific marketing savvy behind it in the Estee Lauder companies, but nonetheless, an effective board and a very effective leadership and a willingness to invest in research, which of course is one of the passions that I have had, probably being influenced by my experience at BCRF.
So I've talked to friends, urologists, who talked to me about, advances in the treatment of prostate cancer and how it has lagged with the attention breast cancer has received. It's just because women are much better at organizing and women are much better at driving health advocacy. And even with the males in their life, women are more decisive about making decisions. I saw this as a surge in the whole time, that a guy would come in with his the woman in his life, and she would basically drive the decisions. So maybe what if my urologist friends who look after male health issues or other male health issue doctors are on the listening to the podcast, maybe you need to reach out to Carolee and get her to organize some advocacy.
No, Jonathan, I do believe that was a unique group of people that were brought together at a moment in time by a very powerful family who understood and also the interface with a brilliant researcher who was able really to knit together. Look, it took many years, but knit together an incredibly complex organization, but with a very single-minded focus, and that was to support research. Think about it. It wasn't anything else. It was just support research. And they, year after year, made sure that the messaging of the disease was shared for all women. And I'm not sure that I've seen that. I am always puzzled, I agree with you, on prostate cancer, because I would have thought, since men are, in to some of your earlier comments, so much more powerful, at least in so many ways, that would have been organized by now, and that it would be there would be a similar counterpart. But I don't believe there is one. So I agree with you that this is a playbook that should be studied.
You know, Michael Milken started CAPCURE, and I had the privilege of meeting him and the urologist who he worked with on that. Skip Holden out of my old place, Cedars-Sinai, and they've done great work. It's just getting men's attention. Mm-hmm. And in fact, testicular cancer, which is obviously an issue that only affects men, the most successful campaigns to get men to think about examination, self-awareness, seeing their doctor, the most successful campaigns feature women. And maybe that's the only way we can get men's attention. But I believe that people change behaviors when they change their beliefs. And there's something about the male psyche that I think needs some work. I think that'll be the subject of a podcast in a year or two when you've solved that. But I want to get, you mentioned access circles. I want to give a brief backgrounder. After you and I got to know one another, you invited me to speak at a meeting you organized in Aspen, Colorado, for Access Circles, which you founded in 2008 with a group of successful women. And I remember pointing out to you that I wasn't a woman, but you said I could be an honorary woman for the purposes of the meeting. Can you tell us a little bit more? You mentioned it earlier, but tell us a bit more about your inspiration to start Access Circles, which is, I have to tell you, what a brilliant meeting and what a fun and delightful group of ladies were there. And what would you say are the greatest achievements of the group, which is still going and is now, what, a couple of thousand strong?
Yes, definitely. And first of all, thank you for remembering that. That was such a hoot. And everyone so loved your charismatic presentation, should I say, and your ability to engage everyone on a extraordinary intellectual level with the messaging that you had, which gets back to the, oh no! I mean, it was amazing, and I hope we get to do it again. There's very, very little information, often confusing information, on women's health, and especially in the major diseases that affect women in their lifetime, such as heart disease, which you are perfectly aware has a huge rate of misdiagnosis. Cancer, we'll get to some of this data in a little bit, but autoimmune disease, which of course affects 80% women, and brain health, and Alzheimer's, of course, also is 66% women. So remember earlier, I shared with you my passion for building teams and collaboration. And after I sold my business, I did realize that I knew a vast number of highly successful women who ran companies or built companies. And I knew that we shared many passions between us. And one was to understand, for us, you mentioned health span earlier, how to live the healthiest lifestyle possible, because none of us wanted to just quote unquote age and be prone to disease, which of course we know that is what tends to happen, but rather, how do we need, if we're going to live to be, which we are, into our 80s, 90s, 100s, centenarians, what would it take to lead that lifestyle and to provide that to our families? And so I understood from leading several business organizations that we learn a tremendous amount from one another. And so the idea of creating these forums in which to share this kind of knowledge from brilliant people like you sounded like a great and fun idea. And so it continues today, and it has transformed and saved many lives. So for that, I am most grateful, because there has been information that has been quickly acted on that had someone not heard it, they might not be with us today. So I do feel that knowledge and information is the most important gift that I can give to this community of women.
Well, one of the things that struck me, and again, thank you for your kind comments, it was delightful. And I have to say also, I've been to purely male meetings, and women are just a lot more civilized to hang out with than men, just a lot nicer. But I'd like to think about, you get a group of very powerful women together and you have a more global view, and I mean that literally and metaphorically, of health. And during this pandemic, I think if people haven't learned the lesson that someone sneezes in Wuhan, someone in Greenwich, Connecticut catches a cold, or worse. The World Health Organization has characterized health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. And that includes things like financial health. What are our obligations and possibilities in the first world to improve the health of everyone on the planet? Because by doing that, we all benefit.
I couldn't agree more. And that is exactly why I created my second not-for-profit, which is WHAM, Women's Health Access Matters. Because remember, women make 80% of the healthcare decisions for their families. You touched on that even when you were talking about prostate cancer, because women are the ones that drag or influence their husbands to go see a physician, often when they, seem to be reluctant to do so. But I do believe that as successful business people, we have the intellectual, financial, and emotional capacity to create lasting and sustainable change and provide that information. And what many people don't realize is that women actually drive the global economy and make the decisions that affect the well-being of the economy. So I'll get into that in a little bit, but that data is very available in that, women are 50% of, at least in the US, 50% of the workforce, and they're the majority of the population. We control over 60% of the personal wealth, and we're responsible for over 85% of consumer spending. So really, we drive the economy.
That's a perfect backdrop to talk about WHAM, which stands for Women's Health Access Matters. And you launched that, 3-4 years ago, 2018, and you now chair the board. I have to tell you, Carolee, that because of the perverse way my mind works, when I first saw the title, I was going to do a whole series of 1980s pop references, such as you do it right, and right now. But other than that, that reference, I'm going to suppress the urge. So tell us about the fundamental mission. You've given us the background statistics. What's the fundamental mission of WHAM? And tell us about your partnership with the RAND Corporation, advocacy groups, researchers, and so on.
Yeah, definitely. I would love to go down that other path, but we'll stay here. So yeah, I just gave you, some of the data, and let me just give you, and then I'll get to answer more directly the question. But the backdrop is that women are often pulled from the workforce, as you know, because of inadequate treatment options or to care for their families, and then again, there are direct consequences for our businesses and our economy, and historically, for a variety of reasons, women have historically been left out of medical research, even for diseases that differentially or disproportionately impact them. But we won't get into all of that right now. So we created WHAM as a 501c3 to catalyze accelerated research and investment focused on three very clear objectives.
I'm sorry to interrupt the flow, Carolee, but just for the benefit of our non-American listeners, a 501c3 is effectively an organization that seeks to benefit the organization. So it's like a charity rather than a for-profit business.
That's correct. It is a not-for-profit. So it's identified. That's an American tax code, which is how a not-for-profit is often identified. But it is a not-for-profit. The objective is not for me to come into the office every day to say, so what is our revenue going to be? I might say, how much money are we raising today for our research? But the goal is very different and much more broad and much more for the a public purpose, not an individual gain. So when we created WAM, it was with the idea to see if could we really show that by accelerating research, we would really have an economic impact. And so we created three ideas or three initiatives. The WAM Investigators Fund, which makes awards to cutting edge research. Remember back to my BCRF days that showed that research can transform women's health. The second was to create the WAM Collaborative, which was to bring together those leading researchers who are working to advance sex-based research, because there are less, believe it or not, less than 15 institutions in the U.S. that financially support this research. There are individual researchers, but there's only less than 15 institutions, which I find appalling. And then to create the WAM report, which would be a series of studies that would look specifically at disease areas and understand what we do leave on the table when we don't invest in women's health. And to, could we identify the economic impacts of increasing investments in women's health research? And so we engaged the RAND Corporation to create the WAM report, and we're just beginning to release the results.
Well, one of the things you mentioned there was the financial impact. It sounds stupidly obvious, but back when I was at medical school, we learned that children weren't small adults and women are not merely more shapely versions of men. So in recent years, there's been an explosion in knowledge about sex and gender differences in medicine. You've just made the point that erasing the gender gap in medical research isn't just good science, it's good business. So can you expand on that element of it? And then I want to dig down into some of the WAM reports.
Yeah, sure. So Alzheimer's disease cost our economy $305 billion in 2020. Now, let me give you some data. Women are 66% of the patients, but only 12% of research dollars focus specifically on women. Let's go to coronary artery disease. That costs our economy over $555 billion a year. Women are 50% more likely to die within the year following a heart attack than men. But guess what? Only 4% of research dollars focus specifically on women. Rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease, which of course you're aware of, costs our economy over $40 billion a year. Women are 60% of the patients, yet only 7% of research dollars focus specifically on women. And that's just the beginning. Women are twice as likely as men to suffer from depression, but less than half of animal studies in this area use female mice. Non-smoking women are three times as likely to develop lung cancer compared to non-smoking men, and we have no idea why. How about this one? Women are nearly 80% of patients with autoimmune conditions, many of which we don't even understand and have no viable treatments. So what's wrong with that picture?
Well, nothing. I think it's one of those rhetorical questions that's best left hanging until WAM solves it. And I have to tell you, I was sort of like, if you're holding a sneeze in, I'm going to have to sneeze afterwards because I've got all sorts of WAM jokes in my head. I'll share them with you and on. So the initial WAM report focused on Alzheimer's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, and coronary artery disease. Now, you've referenced them. And I remember hearing years ago that if a woman presented to an emergency room with chest pain, the first investigation she was likely to get is a mammogram rather than an angiogram. So I'm sure these reports are in process, but any early data you can give us? And if not, then we're just going to have to bring you back.
Well, let me answer it a little differently. Yes, there's a lot of data, and that still happens, actually. They're given an antidepressant and sent home, and they dropped out of a heart attack. So I unfortunately believe that still does happen. Because as you and I know, women experience and express disease differently than men. And so if medical schools are not teaching that, for example, and many are not 100% recognizing or up to date on what you described, then it's an issue. But what we have found through the WAM report is that women's health research isn't just good science. It's a great investment. And here's the exciting part. It yields far higher returns than general research. So, for example, we found that doubling our current investments in women's health across our initial disease areas of heart, looking at coronary artery disease, autoimmune, rheumatoid arthritis, and brain, that in itself, if we just looked at those three areas, will generate billions of dollars back to the economy through improved quality of life and increased productive years of work, alleviating caretaker time, and through direct healthcare savings. So the bottom line is that this is not just good science. This is economically a much more viable decision to make. And that's where we hope this will create a tremendous change.
Well, I'm moved, you know that I've spent some of my life in America and some in the UK. And I've told my American friends about the National Institutes of Clinical Excellence over here, which look at the economic impact of therapies and so on and so forth. And they were characterized in America by certain political commentators as, quote, death panels, end quote, when in fact all they are is a means of saying we have a limited amount of resources and we better wake up to that damn fast. You've referenced the cost of Alzheimer's. You know, where do we spend our dollars? Do we spend it doing coronary artery angioplasties and drug-eluting stents? Or do we put a program in place in schools to get children to eat properly, exercise, and not smoke? So yeah, we've got to start looking at the cost implications, right?
Totally. No, that's a very accurate assessment. And for example, you know, you mentioned Alzheimer's. If we just doubled Alzheimer's research funding focused on women, adding $280 million generates $930 million in economic returns, which is about a 224% return on investment. And that, by the way, is 15% higher than we get in general research. So if you're a business person, and this was my premise and thesis, is let's approach this, like you just said, as what is the return? Where are we going to get the highest return? So I completely agree with that.
Yeah, I've talked about in the past about doing things to improve the quality of life of people in LDCs, lesser developed countries, who live in close proximity to their domestic animals, increasing the likelihood of a zoonotic disease becoming a pandemic. I'm hopeful that now people will take this sort of thing seriously. So tell me, Carolee, other than coming back at some point in the future to tell us what amazing things your research has discovered, what's next for WAM and importantly for Carolee?
Well, let's start with WAM because, I mean, we're just starting to release the results from RAND and we have several incredible partners. So, for example, the American Heart Association is our partner for the cardiovascular research and Bright Focus Foundation, which is a very innovative foundation in DC, is working closely with us on Alzheimer's. And La Jolla Institute for Immunology, which is one of the leaders, of course, in this pandemic, is working with us very closely on autoimmune disease. So our goal is to make sure that the WAM report states a critical business case for change. So no CEO, no business person looking at this data could argue to blindly continue with the status quo because any business would fail. So I think our goal is really at the moment, since it's just happening, is to start working with journalists and influencers like yourself and advocates and business leaders and economists and researchers and doctors and more to drive a very meaningful shift that we know can increase funding for women's health research to create the kind of impact and sustainable change that we all want to see in the world. So this comes back to one of your earlier questions. How do we change health for everyone? Well, you change start by changing women's health only because it's so far behind in terms of research, and because they drive women drive the economy. Just look at those two factors, and then say to yourself, what impact would that make? And so that for WHAM, that's my immediate goal, and we'll be releasing in September the cardiovascular and the autoimmune reports. So that'll be very exciting. The only report that we've released so far, which has been astounding, has been the Alzheimer's report, and even NIH is quite interested. We did a presentation there at one of their symposiums. So, and for me, I'm obviously very motivated by this work, and have been totally absorbed by the not only the intellectual opportunity that's been offered to me, but the people that I meet. And so this has taken me so out of my comfort zone, which is great, because that makes me change and grow. So the more I can do that, the happier I am.
As I said, you have boundless enthusiasm and a thirst for knowledge. So couple of things. Number one, you have to come back to us when those reports are ready. Ping me. We'll get you back on the podcast and telling doctors and healthcare professionals around the world about your amazing work. And secondly, I'm going to ask our host at EMG to put up a link on the website, the EMG Health website, to the amazing work that you do, certainly with WHAM, and how people can get involved in their communities with you, and just even with their own thinking about things. So, Carolee, my final question for you, I like to ask everyone who's on this podcast a version of this question. You understand fashion and fashion accessories, amongst many other things. If you were to open a jewelry box in your room and out popped a genie and gave you three wishes, what would you ask to improve the health of women around the world?
It's such a great question, and I had to really think about that. Equity in health research, obviously, so that we have the understanding and data that we need in order to help all women live their best lives, both in terms of their health and their financial success, because they're intertwined, as we also know. And then equity in health, drug, and therapeutic development, because even when we understand issues in women's health, there's still a tremendous gap of getting products and drugs to market to meet their needs. And the expansion of the femtech industry is very exciting, but I've heard too many stories recently of companies buying up startups with a promising women's health solution and then just putting it on a shelf. And that is something I'd really like to learn more about, probably from you. And less than 3% of VC money goes to companies started by women. I'd love to see that change. And I think lastly, better access to healthcare. And I don't just mean insurance coverage. I mean better access to providers who truly listen to women and take their pain, symptoms, and their health needs seriously.
I think that latter one, one of the issues is, you know, maybe it's because of my age, but I'd like to see a change in the way our medical students are trained, and not just to how they react to women, but how they react to children, how they react to old people, treat people with dignity and humanity and individuality. And your middle point about funding for female-led companies, I wonder what the data show. I just don't see enough women in leadership positions, certainly in the life sciences, certainly going to the investment banking meetings in the life sciences. I've loved that field, Carolee, and you see so few women there. Is it because there isn't money available to them, or is it just that they've got more sense than to spend their lives doing that? So,
no, I think I'm not sure they know, first of all the places where they can go. I think women are stretched, and I'm going to say at the risk of being shot down, and multitask more than men, because often women still are providing the daily needs of their families as well as their positions. So the idea of attending and or seeking out these conferences or meetings, or even developing the skills necessary to be able to communicate what their needs are, I think has not really been an issue that's been thoroughly addressed. But I do believe that this is one of the areas that WAM certainly does want to focus on, because we know that in order to create significant change, research is a very important element, but translating that research into viable products, diagnostics, et cetera, is going to be vital. And you can't do that without having financing. So not every scientist necessarily wants to become a business person, but for those business people who are straddling the world of science, women and the women in particular, they do need, I think, a different kind of network. And at the moment, that network is still an old boys network. So we have some thoughts on that. You know, I think the whamreport.org, which is where most of our data lives right now, which we're trying to make available to everyone, touches somewhat on this, and we'll be adding a lot more onto that site that hopefully will give women further reach of how they can find funding, which is so vital to their success.
Well, you talk about women taking a leadership position and educating people. I can think of no person better to do it than Carolee Friedlander. All that glitters is not gold, except this time it is. Carolee, you are pure gold, studded with multiple pristine diamonds of knowledge. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, Jonathan, it's truly been my pleasure, and I really hope that we do continue once we release our other studies, because I feel that there's so much work that we, you and I, can collaborate together in order to make the kinds of changes that I think we're both looking for in the world today. So I'm really appreciative of this opportunity. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And as I say, please look on the website for further details. If this podcast hasn't persuaded you, let me tell you, she is one hell of a lady. And she's a force to be reckoned with and always does it with a big smile on her face. So please check out Carolee and all the great work she's doing. Well, that's it for today, folks. If you've enjoyed this episode, and I'd be stunned if you didn't, please like us on social media, tell your friends, and tune in next week for another episode of the EMG Health Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Jonathan Sakia. But until then, stay safe, stay well. Stay curious.